Welcome to the Thriving Abroad podcast, where through great conversation with expats and experts in the field of global mobility and international HR, we discuss how to maximise the positive outcomes of international relocation for all the stakeholders in the process. Today, we're talking about pregnancy and childbirth abroad. This is a topic that really highlights the way in which international relocation impacts on every aspect of one's lives. Navigating pregnancy in one's own country can be challenging enough, but a new country and culture can give that challenge a whole new meaning. Without doubt, it impacts on all family members on every level, emotionally and practically. As an expat, how do you best look after yourself or your partner while pregnant abroad, in particular in accessing the best care? And as the employer, how can you best support your employee and their family? Today's podcast gives an overview of the challenges and introduces a novel way in which to offer support to expats. Hello and welcome to this edition of the Thriving Abroad podcast. It's Louise speaking, your host for this conversation, and I'm delighted to welcome to this call Karen Wilmot. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Louise. Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you here today. Now, Karen is the virtual midwife. She's an adventurer, a traveller, and entrepreneur on a mission to restore normality to childbirth through effective online education. She's lived as an expat for most of her adult life. Now, Karen's career has enabled her to work on a diamond mine in South Africa, in a small village in Mexico, in a military hospital in Saudi Arabia, and with the royal family of Oman. This rich diversity of experience has given her a deep insight into the needs of women across countries and cultures. By extending her study of birth outside of her own culture, Karen's learned that in many other cultures, it's celebrated and honoured as a rite of passage with ritual and ceremonies. She realised the deep need for support in the current technocratic policy-based system. So it's lovely to have you here, Karen. And, you know, listening to that introduction and from that introduction, I get a great sense of, I mean, obviously you've had lots of expat experience, lots of transition and change, I'm sure, associated with those, but also a career that's moved and evolved alongside that experience. So I'm just wondering, how has your career evolved over the years and come to the point where you are now the virtual midwife?
Well, it's funny you ask that, actually, because if you'd asked me 20 years ago or told me what I would be doing 20 years hence, I certainly would have had, this wouldn't have entered into it, you know, working in right. The Middle East and running a center and working with the virtual midwife. I think I've always followed my heart. I've always worked with women and I've always been involved in the arena of women's health and specifically childbirth. And it's just gone through that. So I think the virtual midwife and what I'm doing at the moment started about 15 years ago when I first moved to the Middle East and I was working in a private hospital. And over the years, as I say, just saw how technocratic and procedure driven it was and how we weren't treating childbirth with the respect and honor that it really deserved. And it wasn't just a Middle Eastern thing, because I think it happens all around the world. But that was where I was, and that was where I thought I could make a difference. And it started really small. I just had this vision to support more women on a deeper level and help them throughout pregnancy, especially because I was working with expats who were faced with the challenges of being away from their home and family. And, you know, I started doing that 8 years ago, just working on my own and just supporting families, and it's grown and grown and grown, and a year and a half ago we opened a center. So it's really evolved just by following my heart and I think listening to my calling and listening to what I felt was right.
Fantastic. And so the center that you run now is specifically focused at supporting pregnant women, is that?
Yes, pregnant women, yeah. And babies, and exactly. And providing a more, you know, an approach that supports them throughout pregnancy.
Right. Yes. So it's not just the medical care.
Weeks afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. And that's whereabouts are you in the Middle East now?
I'm still in Oman.
You're in Oman.
And I first came here in 2004 and I've kind of left and returned three times. And in between that, developed the virtual midwife, which I'm going to continue to do because that's where I'm able to really go global. Because I think, as I say, you know, we have to use the technology that we have available. And especially for expats, we're more connected than ever. You know, all expats will be using Skype and online courses and staying connected with technology. Yeah, and that was the way I realized that I had to use that to my advantage to reach more women, especially those who were in remote areas.
Yes. Yeah. And what a fantastic way in which you can. So, yes. Brilliant. Brilliant. So let's talk a bit about the sort of challenges. What challenges do you feel expats are facing when they are pregnant abroad? What have you seen people struggling with most?
I've narrowed it down to three, and I would say that the first one is that they feel unsupported and lonely because they're far away from their home and their family, and especially if they're new expats, you know, they're still settling in and adjusting to the country and the culture and the language and everything. But the good thing is that very often that will force them out of their comfort zone, because most countries where you land as an expat have established expats there, and most established expats will have already formed groups. Like here, we have Muscat Mums and, you know, women's guilds and things like that that are designed specifically to help expats to integrate into the new society, introduce them to new people, show them around. So, you know, although that's a challenge, every challenge has a benefit. And the benefit in this case is stepping out of your comfort zone, meeting people that you might not necessarily have met before. And very often those women end up becoming lifelong friends because you're traveling that pregnancy path together, which is quite an intimate journey. And I know many of the ladies who've attended my childbirth classes have stayed friends, you know, for years and years, even when they end up leaving and going to another expat's placement. You know, they stay friends.
Yes, yes. So, I can relate to that.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You know, because they birth their babies together and bring them up and go to the childhood groups and everything.
Yes, exactly.
So yeah. I think the loneliness one is a big one, but it always has a knock-on benefit. The second one is a natural tendency to think that things are better back in their home country. Because that is what they know. That is what they've grown up with. And very often they've got a family doctor or somebody that they've been visiting all their life. And so they naturally think that it will be better back home. I know that the English expats I work with always quote the NHS. You know, they know how the system works. Even if it's not perfect, they understand it. And the way I help them with that is I encourage them to do more research. And it makes them really look at what it is that they want. And sometimes they will find that they will get a better outcome purely because they've more focused on making sure that they know what they want and how to get it. And, you know, once they know what they want and they realize, oh, actually I can get that in this country, it takes the stress level down, and then they can set about finding ways to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate to that as well. Having had a baby both in the UK once, having been pregnant abroad, but then moved home and had the baby at home, not because of the baby moving home, but, you know, we just happened to move home, and then done it the other way around. So pregnant in the UK, but moved abroad, and both ways. Yes. Expectations are a really powerful thing, aren't they? And definitely understanding how the systems work makes a big difference for sure. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, even if you were back in back home, I think it's important that you understand how the system works in pregnancy and childbirth, because it's not necessarily the same as a broken hip.
No.
You know, pregnancy is not an illness.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I suppose also from a cultural perspective, you know, the approaches are very different. Do you find that? I mean, you must work with a wide range.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Mm. So, you know, it's a different approach that comes from their cultural underpinning.
Very much so. Like, I know that the Dutch expats really treat childbirth as something very natural and normal, because home birth is the norm in the Netherlands.
Yes.
So, you know, for them, they have to get their head around the fact that they have to give birth in a hospital as opposed to at home. So that's also different. And then, you know, just things about things getting lost in translation and language barriers. So, you know, it really makes them aware that they need to be very clear and communicate effectively, know what questions to ask, and know what their choices are, so that yes. they can make the decision based on what's available.
Yeah. And certainly for me, I had my second child in Portugal, and my Portuguese was okay at that point, but certainly not fluent. And that was an interesting experience, because although the obstetrician spoke fluent English, so that was fine when he was around, but when he wasn't, the nurses didn't. So getting my needs across was at times quite a challenge. So I can relate to that for sure.
Big one is language.
Yes. And I suppose if it comes to crunch, then perhaps having someone who can interpret for you is quite fine. Do you find people do that?
It hasn't really been a big thing here where I'm in the Middle East, because most of the hospitals and care providers speak really good English, but certainly, you know, in your European countries, it's more of an issue. And it's something that I'm also working on creating and providing through the Virtual Midwife, is some kind of a, you know, translation service for the basic things. So you know, the basic questions are there in different languages, and the words and things that you would use commonly in the childbirth and pregnancy arena, just to make it more understandable.
Yeah.
Or images, you know, even pictures sometimes can be incredibly effective.
Yes. And I know sometimes people work with doulas, don't they? Is that something you've come across?
Yes.
Because I think at some point I was offered one the first time I was pregnant. There was someone I knew who offered that service, but then I moved back to the UK, so it wasn't so necessary. But so a doula, just explain quickly for the listeners what a doula does, because that's perhaps something that...
Yes. So a doula is someone who is trained to assist you during childbirth, but not necessarily for the medical aspect, more for the emotional support. So somebody who will be with you through your labor from the start all the way through to the end. So they're not medically trained, but they do understand how to support you in pregnancy and birth. And there's a lot more doulas these days, which is a wonderful thing, because midwives are, well, there's a worldwide shortage of midwives. So very often, depending on the way midwives are working, they don't have the time to spend with the woman throughout. I mean, a labor can be, you know, 12, 15 hours. And depending on the midwife's caseload, she can't necessarily stay with you for that entire time, but the doula can.
Yes.
So that makes a big difference as well.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend doulas for all expats, because it just gives them, you know, somebody who's in the system, who knows the system, and who can be your voice, who can be your advocate.
Yes. And then you're not, as I remember, you know, partway through the birth of my second child in Portugal, you know, just being very unaware of what was going on, actually, just because I couldn't actually communicate fluently. And my husband, who spoke fluently, had disappeared at that point. And fortunately, he came back and we have sorted all that. But yeah, if I'd had someone there with me, I can imagine it would have been a lot calmer from my personal perspective.
It definitely does help to, keep the woman who's birthing in that calm space, so that she knows there's somebody there who's kind of got her back. And ideally, that person can speak the language of the country that they're in.
Yeah. And that probably brings me neatly on to the next question I wanted to talk with you about, is this whole concept, when you talk about it on your website, of a holistic birth. Can you tell me, or tell us a bit more about this, and what you mean by this approach, and what led you to develop it?
Because every birth that I've attended, which is in the hundreds, almost thousands, is unique and different, and they're all variable. And I'm sure you know just from your own experience that both of your pregnancies and births were completely different. And even as a midwife, when I'm working in the hospital, I could do 5 births in a day, and each one is absolutely different. And so we have to embrace each birth as a unique one, and each woman who is giving birth as a unique woman. And we have to include, you know, every aspect of being human, every aspect of her being a woman, which is physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, cultural. All of those aspects form part of her expectations, her beliefs, her behavior, how she approaches pregnancy and birth. And, you know, just as I mentioned earlier, whether, you know, that most of the Dutch expats that I work with, they really do approach pregnancy and birth in a very relaxed manner. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if they've lived in a place where they've watched their sisters and mothers and aunties and grannies giving birth at home, and it's just one of those things, their mother's pregnant and then goes upstairs, has her baby, comes down, and life goes on.
Mm.
As opposed to others who live, you know, coming from the States, where it's very, very procedure, very high rates of intervention, it would be unheard of or unthought of to have a baby at home. They'd rather, they think it's much safer to be in a hospital with all the interventions available. So, you know, we have to, as midwives, or for me as a midwife, I have to embrace all of those beliefs and expectations and every aspect of that woman to help to prepare her for her own birth. And with the understanding that it is very unique based on all of those things.
Yeah. And I, for me, I suppose, and so for her own birth, it's the crucial word, isn't it? Her, it's her own perspective, exactly. Preferences and wishes, I suppose, in the way, isn't it, as well? It's not this, a birth process imposed by a system, be it, you know, the home births of Holland or the medical interventions of America. I mean, in the UK, we're somewhere in between the two. So yes. Actually, not so many home births, although that is possible, but you know, quite some natural birth centres in hospitals, for example, are very common in the UK.
And becoming more popular now, the birth centers.
Yes, they are definitely. And how do you involve the partners in this whole process? Because I guess this is the thing that is probably very culturally informed as well, isn't it? Some cultures, partners involved all the way through, and they're at the birth and very, you know, participate, and others perhaps not. So how do you sort of accommodate partners in the whole process?
In my experience, across all cultures, I've found the partners wanting to be involved. Mm-hmm. And even when they're not so sure, I encourage them to be involved, because it is such an intimate part of your relationship and a growth into a family. So I encourage all the partners to come along to the birth preparation classes that I hold, whether it's online or in person. And I focus a lot of my attention on the partners and their role in it, because very often they think that, you know, it's the woman giving birth and there's nothing that they can do, but their role in supporting them is huge. And when they understand how to, and they know what to do, it really empowers them to step up and be that support that their partner really wants and needs them to be. You know, I teach them the breathing techniques as well, because although it's the woman who needs to practice them, they need to understand them, because they're the one who's going to be pacing the breathing, because their partner is experiencing the sensations. So she's the one whose breathing will probably change in response to those sensations. If he is fully present and aware, and he knows what to expect and how to pace and guide her, then he's able to do that.
Yes.
And understanding that, you know, sometimes their partner will want to be touched and sometimes they won't.
Mm.
And the difference between hard touch, soft touch, learning to read her body language, learning to, you know, make sure that there's eye contact if necessary. And when there is eye contact, that his eyes are showing that he's there, present and calm.
Mm.
As opposed to, you know, bored or frightened, whatever, you know, but their role is hugely, hugely important. And in pregnancy, you know, understanding all those discomforts and how then they can support what they can do. And then in the first weeks after birth, you know, they can't breastfeed the baby, but they can make sure that their partner is, you know, eating regularly, got lots of things to drink, comfortable, helping her to get some rest and holding the baby between feeds. You know, there's a lot that they can do to make the process so much more enjoyable for both of them and make them feel that they really are doing this together as a team.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, very helpful. Yeah. helpful there. I think really, really important. And actually, when I think of the difference between the way in which my two daughters were born, and it's quite interesting actually, and my husband's participation in both of those, because my second one was a cesarean, and so of course suddenly his participation wasn't as it was in the first, and it kind of, and then also in a very sort of hospitalized experience as well, you know, that they just can't be involved, so it has a completely different impact, I think, in the whole process. So it's really worth thinking about that, and now looking back I realize I don't think I did at the time, but probably should have done. Yeah, really, really important. Yeah, I'd really emphasize the importance of involving the partner and thinking about how you want them to support you through the entire process, and post birth and at home and everything too. Yeah. Yeah. So thinking about...
And you raised quite an important... Oh, sorry.
No, go on.
But you raised an important point about, having a C-section. And it's important for me to make sure that I always include, you know, what happens when things don't go as planned. Because with birth, it is so unpredictable that very often things don't go as planned. And knowing the variations from the norm and what happens when you step out of and how partners will be supportive for, so.
Yeah. And actually being prepared, perhaps that might be a possibility, because in my mind it wasn't. You know, we talked so much about natural childbirth and everything. The thought of a cesarean had never crossed my mind, but then it was an emergency one. And suddenly at that point, everything changed. And now I think back on it, my partner was very much pushed to the side, and I don't think I think he saw my daughter just after she was born, but then she got whisked away and neither of us saw her for a while. And, you know, it just, a completely different experience, completely. So yes, really important to think about the more, different scenarios and how you will cope and manage them. Very important point there. Okay, so that actually kind of brings us on to my next question, which is really about the practicalities. I guess what would have helped me when I first moved to Portugal when I was 4 months old was really knowing what questions I should ask. Okay, it was my second child, so I did have an idea. But I suppose I had taken at face value, you know, the way in which the UK system worked. I kind of didn't really sit down and think, well, how will it be different here? I've probably made quite a lot of assumptions. So what kind of questions should people be asking about the healthcare services in the host country?
I think we can break it down to kind of where, what, and how.
Okay.
You know, the first one would be is what kind of birth is the person wanting? Now, most women I know and that I work with are wanting a natural birth. And if they want an elective cesarean section, it's probably a fear-based decision, thinking that it's easier and better. But either way, they need to look at both options and decide, okay, this is what I want and this is what I'm going to prepare for. And then they need to look at, okay, if that's what I want, where can I go that will best support me in that decision? So you're going to have to look at the hospitals that are available. And then how am I going to make sure that I get that? So also, as I say, knowing what questions to ask. So you need to know what tests and scans are needed throughout your pregnancy and when they need to be done. And does the hospital that you've chosen have the facilities available to have all those tests and scans done? And if they don't, is there anyone else in this anywhere else in the country that I'm in that I can have it done? And if not, I'm going to have to plan my traveling home around the tests and scans that need to be done. Now, fortunately, most tests and scans that need to be done in pregnancy are really routine and they're internationally available, even in the most remote areas. But still, it's important that you know when they are and why they do them and what you're going to do with the results. You know, that's also important because we have so many more tests and scans available now than we did 20, 30 years ago. And I mean, that's another whole conversation altogether, but it is important to know what you're going to do with the results. Because one of the ones that might not be available is, let's say, the scan that we do round about week 14, where we check for Down syndrome. Now, that wasn't available a couple of years ago. But at the same time, there's a possibility that you will know that result, but you will still have the baby. So it's not changing the outcome at all, because we can't change if they do find out that your baby has Downs while you're still pregnant, and you do choose to continue with the pregnancy rather than terminate, we're not changing the outcome at all. So, you know, you need to also decide, well, do you want to know whether you're having a Down syndrome? Is it going to help you to prepare, or would it not make any difference at all? Because either way, you're going to have this baby.
Yeah, the same outcome. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I remember those conversations. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it really does come down to where, what, and how.
Yes.
What kind of birth do you want? Where are you going to have it, and how are you going to make sure that you get all of those things? And at the end of the day, it's not even just about the things and the what's available. It's about making sure that your birth is a positive experience. Because you could still have a really positive experience, even if you ended up having everything you didn't want. You know, you may have gone into it thinking, well, I really want a natural birth with minimal interventions. But then something happens, much like what sounds like happened to you, where you ended up having an emergency cesarean section for reasons that were beyond your control. Mm. But you understood what those reasons were, and you understood that a cesarean section was the right intervention done at the right time to still ensure a happy, healthy outcome for both you and your baby. Mm. And it was still a very positive experience for you. And that's what we want, is a positive experience.
Yeah.
Because there are things that are out of your control.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I do focus on a lot is making sure that women know what those things that are out of their control are, in order to let them go and focus on the ones that they can control.
Yeah, yeah. And I definitely, I mean, I suppose, I think that's really important. And this applies generally to expat life as well, I'm quite sure. But you know, we want to understand and create an understanding of systems and processes and feel some element of control. But there also is an importance. We also need to be flexible in our approach as well, because you know, the unexpected can happen. And then we need to adapt to that and manage it in a different way. And that, so, yeah, was the case for me. And the positive experience came because I was able to do that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, really good point. Really good point. Yeah, so then really helpful questions there that get people thinking about, you know, the questions they need to be asking. So thank you for those. Now, I know giving birth in a foreign country can be, a little bit scary, perhaps because of the different language and systems that you're not 100% sure of. And if you're feeling fearful, I mean, how can you manage that sense of fear? Because you can build it up in your mind and really you want to be finding ways to diminish it and manage it carefully. So do you have any suggestions around that?
I think it goes back to making sure that you're really informed, because so often fear is false evidence appearing real. Mm. You know, just making assumptions. You might have heard one bad birth story from one of the mothers' groups that you attended about something that happened at a hospital. But it might be taken out of context, because you know how stories change as they go along, and it depends who's telling the story as to what details will be focused on. Mm. And I remember hearing a story of a birth that I attended, which wasn't a pleasant birth. So, you know, it certainly had the potential to be a bad birth story. But when I heard it being delivered by two different people, and then I had it, my perspective as a midwife, there were three completely different stories. You know, it's about, first of all, stepping away from the horror stories, or taking them and then seeing, does this actually apply in your situation?
Mm.
And is it true, or is it an assumption?
Yeah.
Because there's so many fears surrounding birth. But what is your level of fear, and is it based on true fact, or is it based on an assumption, or even just an expectation? And can you change that in any way? And very often we can, because if it's not true, then it's something, and then it's an assumption.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So if it's an assumption, well, then let's see what we can do. Why is that assumption there?
Yeah.
And can we change it? What can I find out to help me let go of this assumption?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, and linking back to your stories, I mean, we all, in fact, you know, now my children are 14 and 11, I'm well past the point of sharing birth stories, but, you know, for a few years around birth, that is often the conversation, isn't it, with a collection of parents or mothers in particular. And yes, you do, you know, some stories that are best not really heard, best not heard or shared perhaps sometimes, or are just, you know, built up in people's minds to be something that perhaps they really weren't anyway. So it's, you know, really important, I think, to take stories with a pinch of salt, especially the, you know, the ones that seem to be a bit more alarming, because for every alarming one, I'm sure there are, you know, another five that are lovely stories. So really important to take them into perspective. I think that is the thing, isn't it?
It is about perspective, and also to understand that a birth story is so powerful, you know, the birth, it's not just about the birth of your baby. It's a transformation. You've become a mother, you've changed, and it's really visceral. And yes, very often the telling of the birth story is a way of a mom processing those huge changes. So as she tells the story, as the days and weeks and months go by, details change and things change about this, even the story sometimes changes. But it's her way of processing it. And if she had what she thought was a bad birth experience, she's just using that other person to process her birth story. Now, if she's speaking to me, it's fabulous because I can guide her on that transformation and that processing part. But if it's somebody who's still pregnant, they're listening with very different ears, because they're listening and thinking, oh, well, I don't want that to happen to me, and I don't want to go through that, you know.
Yes.
But she's not seeing it for what it is. And so stepping away from birth stories when you're pregnant is probably a good idea. or to see them as the woman processing her own birth, and that what she experiences is completely different to what you will experience, because she's a different person.
Yes. And all those, as we talked earlier, our whole sort of perspective on life and cultural input and, spiritual input, everything, means that we have our different take and perspective on it, and stories and experiences. So really important to bear that in mind. Definitely. So how about we finish by highlighting some tips for creating a calm birth environment? So this, take us to a sort of calming end to the conversation here. If there were five tips you could offer, what would they be, your five top tips?
My five top tips would be, one, to be informed, because if you don't know your choices, then essentially you don't have any. Two, be patient, because it's really easy to think that things will be different or better back home. And you might be more complacent if you are back home. So being hyper alert could be in your best interest. Number three, to be prepared. To prepare for cultural misunderstandings, and as far as possible to prevent them.
Mm-hmm.
And not to be afraid to be specific in explaining exactly what you want and need in the simplest possible terms and in a culturally sensitive way. To be clear with the understanding that what you say and what you hear are sometimes very different. And if you need to, get things translated. And the last one would be to be open-minded. You know, speak to other expats and locals about any traditions or customs or procedures that might be routine and acceptable for locals, but strange and undesirable for you. Mm. And then, you know, if it is that way, to just decline them in a culturally sensitive way.
Yeah. Great. Really good tips there. And I think, you know, and I think perhaps, I'm just thinking back to, I have this vision as we're talking about, sort of being clear, but also being patient and thinking, you know, recognizing that things might be slightly different, because I, you know, breastfed both my children. And when I had my second daughter, I can see this now. On the first night I woke up, and she'd been screaming quite a lot of the night, and I'd been trying to feed her, and obviously, you know, she wasn't getting what she needed at that point. And one of the nurses came in with the minute smallest of bottles and sat her down and gave her a bit of milk, and I was horrified. I don't know, I'm going to breastfeed her. No. And this nurse just said, once, no problem, go to sleep. And Izzy went straight to sleep after this and slept for quite a few hours. I got the rest I needed. Still breastfed the next morning. You know, everything was fine. But I'd been told, don't let them give a bottle in the hospital. Don't let them give a bottle in the hospital. But actually, you know, it didn't matter. And in fact, I got the sleep, and, you know, it wasn't the end of the world at all. So yes, so yeah, you kind of have to, yeah, just relax a little bit. You know, I think when I think back on it, I was quite tense about a number of things that had I just sort of, okay, you know, it's not all written in stone, and you know, it's not all going to be ruined by one little difference or change that goes against what I think should be happening. And that was so totally true in that case, for sure. Yeah. So be open-minded, definitely a good tip.
Yeah, there.
Yeah,
it's a big one.
Okay, so tell us a bit more about your services. I know that you're about to launch an online course, so would you like to tell people a little bit about that, and also about how they can find more about you and the services you offer?
I'd love to, and thank you. But before I do that, there was just one other thing that I really like to highlight for pregnant mums, because so often the focus is on seeing a doctor during pregnancy. And to remember that in an average 40-week pregnancy, you probably only spend between 10 and 12 hours with your actual doctor, which is such a small amount of time, really. It's just the time when you're going to get all the tests and things done.
Yeah.
So, you know, the rest of the time, it's really up to you to look after yourself and to know the difference between a low risk and high risk pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And only a small percentage of women are in the high risk category. So if you're not high risk, you're essentially low risk, and then you can enjoy your pregnancy. It should be an enjoyable time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, so I just wanted to point that out, and then I'll go ahead and tell you about my program. So the Virtual Midwife program has been around for a few years, but I've recently sort of updated all the video content and the audio content. And essentially, it's just a sequential journey guiding specifically experts, but any pregnant mom, through the process of understanding all the choices that are available, all the tests that are needed and required when they're required, and just put it into a really easy to understand format that they can either watch or listen to or read on their ebooks. And then I also have obviously an online community where I do monthly chats, so that we have an opportunity to get to know each other, to make friends, and for them to ask me questions. And of course, obviously, as I mentioned, I do embrace a holistic approach. So it's very much about the physical and mental preparation. And I have an app to teach the 5 essential breathing techniques. So yeah, it's a lovely program for pregnant expats.
Fantastic. Yes, I wish that had been around when I was pregnant and abroad, because it's certainly, well, even at home, I'm sure it would have been helpful. So how can people learn more about that? You can go to your website.
My website is www.thevirtualmidwife. Okay. And if they want to contact me directly, then it's my name, Karen@thevirtualmidwife.com. Otherwise, we have a contact form on the website. And obviously, I have a Facebook page and an Insta page, all under the name of The Virtual Midwife. So it'd be lovely to see everybody there. And there's lots more information. I'm working on lots of other handy tips and things to add to my YouTube channel as well.
Oh, fantastic. So loads of resources there. So I really recommend, if you're pregnant, thinking about becoming pregnant, or even, I don't know, do you do postnatal support as well, Karen? I didn't ask you that.
I do up to the first 6 weeks, okay. Because, you know, it's very difficult to just stop that process when you've got to know mom so intimately and so well throughout pregnancy. It's delightful when the baby is finally born. Yes. And those first 6 weeks have their own challenges. Yeah. So I do like to follow moms through for the first 6 weeks, and then during that time I start the process of kind of, you know, allowing them to be a little bit more trusting of their own instincts and their own ability to mother their babies.
Yeah.
And then I move on to other mums.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, well, I really recommend that you take a look at Karen's resources and do get in touch with her if you have any questions. So that just leaves me to say a big thank you, Karen, for your time today. It's been really great speaking to you, and for all your lovely tips and advice, and wishing you all the best for the future.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you.
Wow. So that is a service and form of support I would have loved 12 years ago. A great way to nurture a proactive approach to pregnancy and childbirth abroad. I also wanted to share another great resource, stories shared by expat parents from around the world in two books called Knocked Up Abroad by Lisa Furland. Worth a look. Lisa says that what's great about the stories is not only the birth insights, but also the ways in which the authors' experiences have had a transformative personal impact and provided great cultural insights. I hope you find these resources helpful. If you've enjoyed this episode of the Thriving Abroad podcast, please subscribe and leave a review for us on iTunes. If you'd like to know more about what we do at Thriving Abroad, you can find us at www.thrivingabroad.com. And if you're considering relocation abroad, or in the process of doing so, or working to support people through the relocation process, why not check out our book, Thriving Abroad, The Definitive Guide to Professional and Personal Relocation Success. Available from Amazon, or read more about it on our website under the book tab. Thank you so much for listening today. Until the next time, bye for now.